We all know that AI is changing the customer journey at a faster pace today than ever before. With new tools around commerce, search, discovery, and agentic shopping, everyone in the world of marketing, digital experience, and the contact center needs to be thinking about how to evolve and move your brand experiences forward. Today, we're going to be joined by someone who has gone deep on the implications for all these changes in the world of healthcare. Carrie Lyken has long experiences in the world of digital marketing and commerce at industry-leading companies like Google, Yext, and Snowflake. We'll talk about one of her favorite topics, the future of the website, and her joking metaphor around the idea that your website is toast. She'll explain more about what that means and how that concept applies, not just if you're in healthcare marketing, but also in a variety of different industries, and help you think about how to articulate the challenges that these new forces pose to your brand and how you can motivate your organization to respond, engage, and build a strategy for the future. So join us on this new episode of The Modern Revenue Executive with Carrie Lyken.
This episode is brought to you by Invoca. When marketing meets AI meets human conversations, revenue happens. Invoca's platform gives marketing, sales, and customer experience teams complete visibility into the buyer journey, from click to conversion, creating better experiences that drive real revenue results. Discover how modern brands are scaling revenue at Invoca.com.
Carrie Lyken, great to see you and welcome to the show today.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, and I'm going to struggle through. I've got a little bit of a cold, but I'm going to struggle through. Now, I want to hit the headline here first, and I want to do it. I mean, you have a ton of experience in healthcare, but the phenomenon we're going to talk about today is not a healthcare phenomenon. It is a future of the web, digital advertising, LLM. It is every industry. I think this topic is relevant. But one of the things that I really like about the work that you've done is you've taken a broad concept and you've gone really deep in a specific industry and really explored what it means. So to not bury the lead from Carrie Lyken is your website is toast. And so do you mind sharing a little bit about your perspective, how you came to this perspective and what you mean when you write your website is toast?
Sure. I can definitely describe that. So I think when I started thinking about this, it came about around when ChatGPT launched in about 3 years ago, actually, around this time, 3 years ago. And we saw the fastest uptick of an adoption of this technology globally ever. And so to reach 1 million users in 2 months is crazy. And so once we started to see that type of adoption and then see how Google was responding to it, because Google was seeing that people really loved how ChatGPT was delivering answers and people loved that. When Google started to say, okay, we need to release something and launch something into market that's similar to ChatGPT, people started looking at what they released, which was originally their version of ChatGPT, which was Bard. They turned into Gemini, and then they incorporated those types of conversational experiences in Google search. And since I have years and years of Google experience, but then also just search experience, I was looking at that specifically thinking, how could this actually change how people are looking for healthcare? And is this going to have a big impact? And early on when Google launched the AI overviews, there were a lot of research reports that started to look at industries and how this was impacting industries. And Google had basically said for healthcare, financial services, and for retail, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that those three industries were ones that they were going to elevate and present more of these overviews to than any other industry. And I thought, well, if I'm talking about the patient journey and I'm talking about the online patient journey, and I've done that for almost 20 years, this is going to have a massive impact on healthcare, on marketing in healthcare, on how people find information. And so that got me thinking. And I know that over the course of so many years, I have been talking to marketing teams, and one of their big focus areas is just optimizing a website and how do we make sure we're getting appropriate content to patients at their moment of need, their moment of search. So there was the SEO component and also the SEM component. So the actual, like what I was involved in, Google Ads back in the day. And if that strategy was to continue to go forward, then discovery was going to change because Google was going to be presenting so many more of these summaries, which was going to obviate the need to actually have somebody go back to a website. So I started looking at it and I said, I need to write about this. I need to think about this. I need to see what's going on. And the more I took a look at what is going on with how Google is actually diminishing how they're sending people to websites, especially healthcare websites, the more I thought, yep, websites are toast. And it's not necessarily websites are toast, but it's the website as we know them today.
It sounds more controversial, more fun just to say your website is toast.
Yes.
But there is a subhead here, which is the role of the website is changing, I think, in terms of what you'd say. And we'll get to that in a minute. Now, one of the things that I thought you did a really nice job in is I think people recognize there is a fundamental change in the buyer journey or the patient journey in healthcare in terms of where people are getting their information. But that's kind of like a 90,000-foot view. Mm-hmm. And you've also started looking at kind of carving out those different types of information that people are looking for, breaking the journey into more discrete steps. Again, you're going to provide healthcare examples, but I think these are broadly applicable across a broad variety of industries. Do you mind talking a little bit about where you see like the different subcomponents working kind of below the headline level of I'm getting less traffic to my website and everybody's going to ChatGPT and AI mode for everything? Like, there are things they're really leaning into to do there from a consumer patient point of view. There are other things that are tending to still lean a little bit more towards the website world. Like, do you mind breaking that down to like the next level of granularity based on what you've seen?
Yes, I can break it down, but I don't necessarily know if what I say today will be the same next week or even in a month.
We're recording early December 2025. So who knows how much of this will be out of date in 4 weeks, 8 weeks, 52 weeks.
I think that what we're seeing traditionally, pre-ChatGPT, pre-conversational AI experiences, pre-AI mode and AI overviews, we saw this traditional journey where if somebody was looking for information, basically Google would say, here are some links or here's a summary, but it's not really, it's sort of like a people also ask, here's some different questions that people might ask, or here's a little 1 to 2 sentence summary of what that question might be. But it would really be promoting people to go to the website. That's really what it was. Now that we have these experiences where people are basically having a conversation now, whether it's in the Google interface, let's say in AI mode, or they're seeing the summary and AI overviews, or they're going to ChatGPT. I mean, the New York Times just had an article about it this week. The Wall Street Journal had an article about it this week. Lots of people are actually giving their medical information, let's say, to these platforms now. We're seeing that people are doing a lot off-site that they used to go to the site to research and to find more information about. So traditionally, let's say 15, even 10 years ago, health systems, for example, would look at how can I buy a content library or how can I create tons of content so that when somebody comes to my site, they can actually get all of the information that they need and it's authoritative and we own it and we know that it's been validated by doctors. People aren't doing that anymore because these conversational platforms are enabling so much of that discovery and even things like deep research and just doing all of that research first before somebody even says, oh, wow, that's interesting. Maybe I should consider XYZ organization. Then on the second step of it, let's say they need to choose a doctor. Then people are also asking these platforms, whereas I think people used to go to websites and go through that whole search process to find a provider. They're not doing that as much anymore. And again, I don't have numbers to prove this, but just the way that the interactions are laid out. But then what I'm seeing, and I've looked at this across almost the last year or so, is that when it comes time to actually booking the appointment or taking an action or a conversion or making a phone call, they're not able to do it through these platforms. And so that's where we're seeing the click have to happen. So that's where we're seeing people need to go to the website. So there's these two distinct or maybe three distinct areas where people are doing what they used to do on websites offsite. But in order to make the transaction happen, that still is very solidly website focused. And that's what makes me think about websites as one big container, the way that it used to be, doesn't necessarily need to be that anymore. It just needs to be a transaction platform. And that's maybe where we're going.
Yeah, I thought for a layperson, one of the, again, the industry specific examples that I thought you did a really nice job laying out is there's this idea of, I have some symptoms, I'm trying to understand a condition. And that's something that has moved from largely being done on site to now being done off site. There is, how do I treat potentially my condition? Can I self-diagnose? I want to be a doctor based on my own ability. It's gone from being on site to now being increasingly off site. But then those last two stages of discovery and transaction of how do I actually find somebody to go to if I need to, that's where the lines are still a little bit blurred as of today, to your point.
As of today, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know what might launch in the, you know, in the next week. I was excited about OpenAI launching their browser, Atlas browser. And that's a completely new search experience as well. And it's a completely new interface too. And that happened in October. And so we're only just starting to see what those changes might look like too. So things are happening so fast.
I mean, you think about the past couple months, you had Atlas, you had sort of the more of the e-commerce experiences. Now we're not talking about healthcare for the moment, but if you're looking at more like physical goods and services, you had OpenAI announce, you know, e-commerce capabilities in the past couple months. You had sort of the idea of deep research around buying things. And so to carry to your point, a lot of these, the talk track of this changes almost as quickly as the ink is dry in some of our commentary.
It's so true.
In these
it's
worlds, so true. It changes so quickly. I'd love sort of your perspective on how you think about giving, again, healthcare providers or other, you know, broad marketing and digital experience thought leaders advice on this. Because in a way, I sort of feel bad for people because I feel like a lot of folks I was talking to, I don't know if you know Drew Landmeyer over at Tufts Medicine. We were talking on the podcast recently and I said, I almost feel like as a practitioner, you're a little bit like, okay, I'm just nearly getting my digital transformation work done. And boom, I get hit in the face. And now it's like, yeah, great. What have you done for me lately? And so I'd love to get your perspective on how much overlap is there between the work that people were doing in kind of the last mile of digital transformation work versus the work they need to do in this new era of AI transformation. Is there overlap? Are those two discrete choices where people have to decide, do I do one or the other? How would you think about that if you're either a healthcare leader or a marketing and digital experience leader more broadly in those competing forces, if that makes sense?
I would think about that. Maybe I would think a little bit differently about it. So maybe pre-COVID, everyone I talked to, and I talked to lots of healthcare organizations, everyone was saying we're going through a digital transformation. And I think the concept was, I'm going through the transformation, and when I'm out of the transformation, we'll be transformed and we'll be done. But then COVID happened, and I think a lot of people realized, oh, geez, we are not near digitally ready for what we need to be ready for. And it was just a trial by fire for every single day that was going on. Now that we're out of that, a good 5 years out of it, what I'm seeing is that I can't really answer your question necessarily because the digital transformation is constant and it needs to be treated as such. So we can't say this is our project, this is what we're working on, and then at this date, we will be done with it. And so it's most acute now because, like we were just talking about, things are changing so fast. What we say today might be completely different next week. And so I've been advising organizations to, yes, do what you're doing because it's important to keep going. You can't stop. There are some organizations who literally will say, I can't look at this right now. And I think that's not good. You do need to be looking at this. And then there are others who are deeply trying to get their whole teams on board to move forward. And then there are other organizations who are actually working with data teams and digital teams and IT teams to really start to figure out how does this work. So they're in these different modes. But what I ask organizations to do is to think about, do what you're doing, but always be looking at what else you need to be doing. So can you be thinking about putting together a tiger team who is constantly looking at what is going on? So you as a leader might not be able to, you need to know what's going on. You need to know what the trends are, but you might not be able to get into the weeds so that you could plan for it. have a team who is constantly looking at this and doing a readout, whether it's once a month, whether it's every 2 months, whether you have an offsite or an onsite offsite every 6 months, and you're talking about what are some of the new things that are happening, what's going on with the consumer behavior, what's going on with technology, how do we make sure that our strategy aligns with that? But it's constant transformation from there, as opposed to saying, begin here, end here. Okay, next strategy, let's move forward. Because I don't think we have the luxury of doing that anymore, given where technology is going.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let me slightly put words in your mouth, also test a hypothesis.
Okay.
I would say if I broadly split up digital transformation efforts into a world, one of which was like content and discovery, because I feel like I spent a lot of time with healthcare systems that were trying to really build up their content libraries, do work around like TransLed. I know, like working with Banner Health and them trying to do work to get all that content translated into Spanish so that their communities in the Southwest could get access to that content. There's a lot of work around content. And as I read some of your work, and I think more broadly around the industry right now, the competition to own the content is getting really hard.
Yes.
Really hard. As opposed to the point of conversion, there's another set of work that I think tended to be more plumbing and pipes oriented of, hey, can we get online scheduling done? Can we start, can we get our online directory of where we can go get access to our providers? Those two streams kind of ran in parallel. And I feel like some of where you're angling towards is like the conversion and sort of business transaction stuff, getting that foundation right today is not only important for digital, if people are still coming to website, it's also important where the AI platforms are going, because that's the most unique thing you have. Like OpenAI or Anthropic or Perplexity are not going to change the reality of the physical health facility presences you have in Massachusetts or you have in a specific geographic area. Their ability to change if somebody from California looks to a California provider for information about a medical condition versus I'm like, I really care what authoritative source, where that is in terms of me getting information about a condition, how I might treat it. I'm sort of agnostic there. Yeah, I thought it was interesting when you looked at some of your work around where the content was increasingly getting consolidated to. Maybe if you can speak a little bit about that and any advice you have of like, should a local provider be trying to go win that war? Do they give up? Like, how do they think about those two stages, kind of that upper funnel of like content and discovery versus the lower funnel of like finding and transacting?
Yeah. Yeah. I think what you're referring to is my non-scientific research studies that I've done. I've done 4.
We'll come back to that in a minute, but let's talk about the conclusions and then we'll come back to your non-scientific methodology.
Yeah. So I wanted to take a look at what the impact, similar to what we were talking about earlier, but what the actual impact was on certain conditions and whether we would actually be, and let's say searching in the Boston market, that I would be able to take a look at a condition on Google or a little bit later using Atlas, but on Google to see for all of the conditions that I tested, how far can I get down in doing all of the research without actually having to go to a website?
And do me one favor, Carrie, really quickly, for the non-healthcare folks, pick any condition and use that as an example as you go the rest of your way through.
Sure. So I selected, this is a really easy one, migraine. So when I was looking for, you know, first ask the question, what is a migraine? And AI overviews would tell me what a migraine was. I didn't need to click over into a website. And actually, they didn't even offer any types of real links. But for all of these different conditions that I looked for, I was tracking. So I wanted to see how many times were different sources actually sourced, even if I didn't need to click through. If I asked for what is migraine and then who treats migraine and, you know, give me, you know, different symptoms of migraine and all the way through to can you book an appointment for migraine? For many of those, you would see how Google was starting to basically say, I know that there are only certain types of resources that we want to constantly present for these conditions. And they're the big names in the United States, the well-known names for health systems, but also government resources as well. Like the CDC sometimes was quoted, let's say for yellow fever, or the NIH was quoted, or even NHS in the UK. So those two were the ones that were mainly sourced. So then a local health system here, because I was looking at Mass General's website in particular, never showed, quite literally never showed for any of the conditions that I actually had pulled from her website. So the question that you pose is, should organizations actually even be focusing on this? Or should we just leave it to these larger organizations that are very well known with respect to content to be able to answer that? And I think it's tough. It's tough to think about that. I think a lot of times what we have focused on is how do we make sure that our content is available in our local markets and make sure that that content is competitive and even SEO optimized. I don't think that's a thing anymore. I really don't. I think that, you know, if Google is going to prioritize a Mayo or a Cleveland Clinic or a government website for pretty much any one of those really like what is migraine type queries. But I think it's still important to be thinking about the website as the content holder and the skeleton, and the information that is on the website needs to be connected to something that's a little bit more localized. So maybe you do have migraine specialists. I know MGH does have them. They have a whole center for migraine. I don't remember what it's called, but they have a center for migraine and they have migraine specialists. They might not need generic migraine content, but they might need content that's associated with individual doctors. And then they might need locations where those doctors are seeing patients. They might need an overall department explanation. They need to connect all of these different pieces on their website. And then what I found in my most recent non-scientific study is they need to start thinking about the transaction piece. So how do you make sure that when somebody is looking for somebody locally, they don't want to know the generic information, but they want to know somebody near them who actually is an expert in it. So maybe then Google or ChatGPT will prioritize that content above and beyond, let's say Cleveland Clinic or Mayo. But then they also need to be able to facilitate actually converting. And so you either need to get them to the website, to get that searcher to the website, or where I think the future is going is we need to figure out how to actually enable the agent, the machine itself, to go through that whole process to be able to then book that appointment. That's going to be very hard in healthcare, but I think that there will be an opportunity there, hopefully someday, to actually ease that challenge that we have just with, you know, finding a doctor and booking that appointment.
Yeah. One of the things that I love doing is learning by looking at industries outside of your own industry. And I thought you did a really nice job on this where if you take yourself out of healthcare, or I'm going to use some other industries that we've seen that are similar to healthcare, like automotive or home services, where your role in marketing is to sort of drive someone to a physical location and then help them get a product or service. And you look at e-commerce, right? And in the Google world specifically, the concept of inventory in an e-commerce and retail world is a very important concept. I actually remember as I was prepping for this, I was thinking about Howard and I talking about this years ago when in the Yext world and the idea of inventory being important, because for, you know, some of these non-retail marketers today, an e-commerce company feeds inventory information to Google. Because when I go out and I look for best fill in the name of a product and it's trying to help drive me, it is useless to the advertiser and it is less than optimal for Google if they drive me to a place where I'm looking for a product or service where they don't have that product or service. But there's sort of a magical thing that has to match between the consumer and their intent and the advertiser or the brand and their inventory. And I don't know if healthcare folks tend to think about what they have around appointment availability as inventory, but you made the point of you should think about this as inventory.
Yeah, your provider data and the availability should be your inventory. If you think about it, like you were saying, other industries are sending information to Google. They've been doing this for years. They have these product feeds and the product feeds are sent through to Google so that Google can receive it in very structured ways to be able to tap into it when somebody is actually searching for best tire, you know, supplier near me. And also maybe how much are these tires, are these Goodyear tires? I mean, they can ask lots of different questions and Google knows, oh, this is rated or this is the cost or whatever the location. What does healthcare have? I mean, a medical device company has actual inventory. But when we're thinking about at the bare bones what a marketer is trying to do, they're trying to acquire patients. I know that's tough in this day and age, but I mean, that is generally one of the areas that a marketer is trying to focus on is the patient acquisition element. Well, how do you do that? Well, you have to go out and you have to find those patients. But what are the patients actually trying to do? They're trying to find the right doctor matched to the, you know, right preference, provider specialty, as well as then availability. Does my availability match your availability? So provider data as inventory, I think, is really important. And it's not, it is definitely something that I think the industry has been talking about. But I think the question is, how do you standardize it? And also then how do you send it to Google and OpenAI and others to make sure that it's sent in a very consistent way. Product inventory is very standardized, but provider data is not. And so I think that's a big challenge, but it is. We need to be thinking about this. And then once you can get that, then you can start to enable the agents, and then the agents could take over. But we've got big hurdles before we can do that.
And I think the big thing is I'm not going to do my best Carrie Lichen impressions. If you wait for the day that Google, OpenAI, Perplexity, and Anthropic say, the gates are open, we can take your inventory data of providers and appointment availability. If you don't do anything until then, you're hosed.
You're done.
Because it's probably going to take you 2 to 3 years to actually get that data available. You should be, because that data is useful in a mobile app world and a digital world too. And so I think getting the hard foundational technology work done and the opt-ins from your different providers behind the scene to get that, that's all hard work that can happen in parallel. And I think that's, to me, one of the areas where I see overlap between what do I do in the world of like legacy digital transformation? What do I do in the world of AI transformation? Those two, it's kind of the same work to lay some of that foundation while you're waiting to see where do the AI models go next in terms of shopping for different types of services and products too.
Yeah. And I work with some organizations now in my current role where there's a sentiment of hurry up and wait. Just hurry up. Oh, actually, now we're going to pause on that. And so there's this start, stop, start, stop. And I don't think that that should be the case for getting your provider data together and building that, you know, that stream, because it's so easy to hurry up and wait. It's so easy to say, well, it's not really priority. Why would I need this anyway? But given how long it takes to get things done in health systems, it actually is important to do it now so that you're ready for when the floodgates do open. We don't know when they're going to open. I mean, I have written about this, but I feel like we have HIPAA considerations. We have legal considerations. We have state-by-state considerations. We have Epic challenge, quite literally Epic challenges with Epic. We have, you know, other EHR challenges. I mean, so many different issues with just how can we identify the inventory or the availability? And then how do we make sure that we can surface? I mean, how do we make sure that the machine can do it and it's not violating patient? I mean, so many different things. We've got a lot to deal with. So we have time, but I would say we don't have that much time. We really do need to work on it as quickly as we can, or at least have a strategy to start working on it and get the right people involved. We can't wait.
Yeah, I would agree. I want to go back to your non-scientific work, less about this exact topic and more as an example of approach and methodology. One of the things I feel like people fall into a trap of doing sometimes is they either rely purely on their gut and don't attempt to quantify everything, anything, or they attempt to quantify things and essentially say, I can only accept quantitative data if I can quantify everything and it's super rigorous and it's super detailed, and short bar is useless. And Carrie's Substack is awesome, by the way. I would highly recommend you go out and check it out, and you'll see some of these examples. But I thought one of the things you've done really nicely multiple times through your writing is you've attempted to apply your non-scientific, scientific method to put some data and structure loosely around some of these problems. So do you mind describing for folks a little bit of like what you did in some of these situations and how you approach that problem of a world where I have a gut instinct, I'm trying to validate it, but I know I can't get the most comprehensive, the most granular data set to end all data sets to validate what I think. How do I go about getting some data, which is better than no data, but is not perfect data?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So let me describe what I did. I alluded to it a little bit earlier, but as we were talking about this much earlier in our conversation, I thought that there was probably going to be a much bigger impact, especially after Google had posted their health checkup. So they have this thing that they announce every year is healthcare focused. And they said that they are going to be rolling out AI overviews to something upwards of, you know, 60 to 70% of healthcare queries. And so I thought, oh, this is going to be a really big hit to traffic to websites. So how could I put together literally a non-scientific study so that I could just take a look at what does it look like today? And then can I look at it again at a certain time frame? And then can I see what that delta might be as far as change is concerned? So I took 24 conditions from MGH because I'm in Boston. I go to Mass General, so not calling them out necessarily. I'm just saying that's my local hospital. My husband works there. Like, I feel very connected to MGH. Took 24 conditions from their website, and I laid out a path. And I wanted to see what actually showed for each one of these conditions. And did MGH, and did their website even show in this local market? So I set out to take a look at all of this, and I had some really interesting findings. That one of them was that MGH didn't show for any of them. And like we talked about before, we had some very consistent findings with some of the very large healthcare organizations. But what I wanted to do is recognize that there are only 24 conditions that I couldn't do all of their conditions. I would have loved to have employed an agent to do it, but at the time I couldn't do that. And so I was doing it manually. And when I published this on my Substack, I also published all of the conditions. I published all of the links of the results. I published what I found. So I basically wanted to show people, here is all of the information. And I encourage others to do the same. If you want to take the exact same ones, do it in your market so that you can actually see what this looks like. But I did it a couple of more times. So I did it four more times and used exactly the same for 24 conditions because I wanted to at least achieve consistency in my non-scientific study. What I find interesting about this is that some people have come back and said, this isn't scientific, so you can't listen to it, or you can't really take this as gospel. And I acknowledge you can't take this as gospel. But Greg, like you said, if you don't start somewhere to take a look at what's actually happening for even a small segment, how could you plan for a future where it might, in healthcare's case, wipe out entire groups of people coming to your website? And so by doing this, I really wanted to encourage people to, you could take and copy exactly what I did, or just take the idea of it and create something on your own to at least start that process so that you could see what's happening in your own market and for your own website. And it doesn't even have to be for healthcare. I mean, I think some of the biggest things that are going to change over the course of the next year will be retail, travel, hospitality. We're just going to start seeing, I mean, definitely newspapers, publishers, those types of things. But healthcare is high up there, but it's not just a healthcare issue. So how do you think about these non-scientific studies? Maybe you take it back to your tiger teams, that, like I was recommending before. Maybe they're tasked with doing this every couple of months and then noting the deltas. Or maybe you just engage every 6 months in your offsite. You have people doing it in the offsite. I mean, there are lots of different ways to do this, but I just feel like to just sit back and say, no, it's not happening to me, I'm not sure that's the smartest thing to do in an era where technology is changing, you know, every moment we blink. But also, there's no way, at least for somebody, I can't do every single condition. There's no way I can do that. I have a day job. And I don't have a team of researchers, and I certainly don't have agents. But I think there's a happy medium, and I think you can just get started. And I do think that that is very important, to just get started.
The vision I have in my head is of some forward-thinking marketer or digital experience professional in an organization where a bunch of people around them don't share their sense of urgency around that topic. And they feel like they're a prophet out in the desert screaming and no one's listening to them. And what you did was a very achievable way of starting to demonstrate the problem for a specific company or a specific vertical, and taking that and breaking it down to a level where said person can go to her, his boss, and say, hey, look at this data about our company and our brand. Is it totally scientific? No. Is it comprehensive?
You can put lots of holes in it if you want to.
Showing all the data that I'm sure some mastermind in Mountain View from Google has about all the search queries and the drafting of what's happening. No, it's not that. But it's a way for you to start to break down the problem and make it relevant to your organization that I thought was a really great way of trying to break down an abstract problem in a world that's changing very quickly. And I just think it's a great example that other people can latch onto. One last question for you that I think is both timely and relevant. Relevant because you spent time at Google, you understand that organization, you understand that ecosystem. And in the week that we're in right now, we're recording on Monday, Sam Altman came out and called a code red at OpenAI because, you know, there was a long period of time from 2022 to mid to late 2023 where I think a lot of people were wondering, like, is Google going to get this? Are they going to figure this out? And the data is increasingly showing that, like, Google is figuring this out. And so I just wanted to get your commentary as an outside observer, somebody who knows Google well. What's kind of your read on what's going on, you know, largely, I think, between Google and OpenAI, but if you want to throw in any of the other AI platforms too, like, what's your diagnostic? What's your read on the big picture here?
I alluded to this in a couple of my Substacks. So this code red, I think, is really interesting. It's the second code red. So we had Google's code red a couple of years ago when ChatGPT was launched. And Sundar, CEO of Google, said, code red, everyone. I don't think he actually called it a code red. That's what it was interpreted as.
Calling it a code red in the spirit of Mark Zuckerberg feels like a very un-Sundar thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. Very un-Sundar thing. But they had to focus. And I think that was very smart for them. With OpenAI doing this, what's interesting about OpenAI is they were the front runner. And they launched, again, three years ago. And everyone just, I mean, I hear it now. I hear lots of people say, I ChatGPT'd it. ChatGPT has become
the new Google.
The Google. It becomes the verb. And so I know that they weren't necessarily riding on that, but I think they've been trying to figure out how to make things stick. And what Google has done is acknowledged that maybe they were behind for many reasons. Maybe it was organizational disorganization. I know they had multiple business units that were working on the same things and they couldn't figure out necessarily how to unite them. They finally did that. But also, I think that there are some other things that were probably going on, but now they're all focused on one thing. And what Google has is they have distribution. And I think distribution may end up winning at the end of the day. So Google has the consumer, so the B2C, but they also have the B2B. So they have the APIs, they have the Google Cloud, they have, you know, what they're doing with BigQuery and with Gemini and Enterprise. They're doing so much and they're putting it all in one ecosystem. And ChatGPT and, you know, OpenAI, they grew fast, but I just don't think they have the distribution necessarily. And so this code red, I think, is very important for them because they need to figure out very fast how they can compete with a behemoth that has very deep pockets and has the distribution. And I venture to say that maybe Google will pull ahead and end up winning here, but I don't actually think that, I mean, OpenAI might end up... They could have financial difficulties. They are highly leveraged, but I feel like they could still be around. And then Anthropic will still be around. Like their Perplexity will be around. They'll all be around and competition is very good. But I feel like Google is just going to continue to bubble up just because of the strengths that they now have. And you put their technology and you put Gemini 3 on top of that, they just can continue to go. So they would have to make a significant stumble to mess this up, I think.
Yeah, I found it interesting because I think, you know, 2 years ago, a lot of people were sort of like, is Google going to completely miss out on this? The thing I would say that Google has in addition to distribution is they have, I think to the point you're making, they have infrastructure, right? Like they have built, if you're a retailer, you've had a product inventory feed going to Google for years. Like that is part of the pipelines that have been built. Google has the infrastructure on your side. Retailer, you have that infrastructure on your side. The things are connected together. You have the advertising infrastructure. There's a lot of things that I think OpenAI and the ChatGPT team have to go build. The one thing that I found amazing is just being out here in Silicon Valley and talking to people around OpenAI. the ambitions of what OpenAI is trying to be is the only company that it reminds me of is Alphabet and Google and the variety of businesses they're trying to get into, the variety of things that they're doing. And you think about kind of the Alphabet holding company construct, at least as it was 8 or 10 years ago, and you had like Waymo, GCP, DeepMind, ads, like all this variety of things. And I looked at OpenAI, I'm just like, the breadth of the things they're trying to do is kind of insane. For me, I wonder if the Code Red actually reins some of that in a little bit and does the like, hey, we actually, instead of trying to do 8 things, we really need to nail the top 2 or 3. But it's going to be an interesting thing to say. And I know the vibe I get from the Googlers I talk to, I'd be curious if you see the same. I feel like Google's got its swagger back. Like you talk to a lot of the people in the business, they're like, we're shipping product. They feel good about it. They see the numbers in terms of what AI overviews and AI mode are doing. And so it's a fascinating thing to watch as somebody who just enjoys observing the evolution of technology and like the games of who's going to win and who's going to lose. And ultimately, I think it's good because consumers are going to benefit regardless.
Yeah, I think Google for many years was tops. And so I think the ethos was, well, we're the best. Even when I left Google and I was walking into organizations and I was talking about things that were not Google, I thought, oh, that's so interesting. You think and talk about things that aren't Google? Amazing. And I think this really forced them to make a shift. And I think there were dark days, just from people I've even talked to who were there. And I do agree. I think people say, okay, we're back. And so maybe some of that nature of let's take some of the hubris away. Let's just say, okay, now we're really like we're shipping things again, like you say, but we've built things that are cool again and we're moving forward with it. And I think they had lost that for a little while.
Yeah. So, yeah. I would agree. Awesome conversation. All right. To wrap up, I got 2 questions for you. One, what's a great book, podcast, or Substack plug? Gary Light and Substack. What's a great resource that you found interesting and useful as this world continues to evolve and move at a super quick pace the past 6, 9, 12 months?
So there's a podcast, if I don't know how to pronounce her last name, her name is Sonia Oja. I read her Substack, so I can share that with you. She is making a commentary almost every single day about what's going on with AI, what's going on with OpenAI, what's going on with Google. Literally every day. And she just has a really exceptional perspective on what's up. And so I would highly recommend that. I just don't know how to pronounce her last name. So
that's okay. We'll drop a link in the description below. And yep. Last more fun question. What's a travel destination on your list? I know, because we're friends, that you've hit some pretty cool travel destinations in the last 6 or 9 months. But what's some place new you're looking forward to exploring or going at some point in the near future?
I'm really obsessed with the Silk Road. And so I would like to go to Uzbekistan. I want to try maybe next fall.
Oh, that's great. I have an awesome book recommendation for me that I can't remember off the top of my head. But I've read 1 or 2 books about Central Asia.
Ooh, and okay.
Going to Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Samarkand, places like that. I think
that's where I want to go.
Would be fascinating. So
yeah, okay. I want to go to places where they're not yet able to handle massive tourist crowds.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, we know an AI platform that can help you figure out an itinerary to get you there.
We sure do.
Harry, thank you so much for the time. Super fun and intellectually stimulating, as expected. Your website is toast, is the takeaway, and appreciate you sharing your time, your strategy, and your insight.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Modern Revenue Executive. Links to any resources mentioned in this episode are in the show notes below. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.